Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, April 2nd, 2015. Just about 2:30 UTC. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. Hello, hello, hello.
And it's time for yet another Curmudgeon's Corner.
Brought to you by... Oh, that's not brought... Oh, we don't have any sponsors? Shit.
We don't have any sponsors. You know, like, Audible sponsors, like, everybody in the world. Squarespace sponsors everybody in the world. I'm talking people who sponsor lots and lots of podcasts. I've heard a lot of them sponsored by this company that lets you print out your photographs on glass, which sounds pretty cool. I mean, I'd read a commercial about that, you know?
We could, you know, if we could just get pennies on the dollar, I don't care. But anyway.
Anyway.
All right.
Before we get started in earnest, I did want to complain about one thing, because, you know, it's good to complain.
Yeah.
No, it's just right now, this very second, you know, I usually have up, you know, I have what we use to record and all that kind of stuff and our plan, but I usually have open a web browser to just bring up web pages that might be useful reference material while we're talking about X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
And right now, my web browser on my main computer has been sitting here with blank screens, unable to open any single web page for anything for the last 15 minutes. And I've restarted it a couple of times. And meanwhile, I mean, I'm obviously talking to you on the internet. I have an internet connection, but it's acting like I don't have an internet connection.
Do you have more than one web browser installed on your computer?
I do, and I haven't tried the other ones yet. I mean, I can probably do that in a second. But right now I'm using Safari. I'd closed it. I reopened it. Nothing changed. Blah, blah, blah. I'd closed everything else on my computer except for the things I'm actually using to do the show. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Just weird crap. And I know my computer's getting old, but come on, give me a break. I mean, I also have all kinds of issues with, like, it just being slow for no apparent reason, like having, you know, almost no memory used, almost no CPU used, but nevertheless, it's running, you know, as if it was completely maxed out, you know? And, you know, that's been going a while. And I think I have a couple of leads on what might be causing it, because I have it doing a bunch of crap in the background. But, you know, you'd think if it wasn't using CPU and it wasn't using memory, it would be just fine.
Maybe the disk usage.
I think it has to do with thrashing the disk. But, you know, I look at the disk activity monitor and it's not horrible either. You know, it's sometimes doing stuff, but it's not horrible. Anyway, you know,
During the holidays, and I haven't done this yet, but I was hoping at some point when the pricing and capacity goes down, I took my nephew's computer SSD? And we replaced the hard drive with an SSD drive.
Yep.
Holy smokes.
Oh, I know. That's supposed to make a huge difference.
My God. It was just smoking fast after we did that. I have been considering doing that, but the thing is that I haven't seen, like, I've seen 1 terabyte drives, but I haven't seen the multi terabyte drives yet out there available. If price comes down, I see a 3 terabyte drive,
you're gonna do it.
I'm gonna do it, especially because on a computer like the one I have, on an iMac, you got a Thunderbolt port on the back.
You can plug it in as an external. You don't even have to.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, I could just plug it in as an external. It'll boot off the external drive. It'll be lightning fast. I mean, it's just, you know,
yeah, I've actually thought about this just to do it as a test, because I have an external drive hooked up to my computer that is a mirror of my main drive. There's a daily backup thing that just mirrors the whole drive. So in theory, I can just flip a switch and boot off that one instead of the main one.
There's an issue with the drive.
See if there's a performance difference, you know, if I flip over to a new drive.
May well be.
Yeah, maybe. And you know, the issue with that, like you said, there's not the big enough SSD drives aren't really there yet. The Apple does have the Fusion drive.
But it's not an SSD drive all the way.
It's not an SSD drive all the way, but it does do some improvement. But they don't sell it as like an external drive you can pop in.
No, I haven't seen that you could buy one of those out there. So
anyway. Folks,
like, studying like your computer, look, SSD drives, definitely. Performance, huge boost. Get them if you can.
Yeah, and maybe I do something like, you know, get a smaller SSD drive to just use it as a boot drive and have all the data elsewhere.
Oh, I'm like, I thought about that, but I was like, nah, screw it. If I'm going to go, I want to go all the way.
Anyway, we do have real topics for today. Enough about me bitching about my old slow computer. At some point, I just need to replace the damn thing. But, you know, it's a big budget item. So, you know, timing is an issue. But so our plan, we're going to talk about all the big controversy about Indiana and the Religious Preservation Act or whatever it is, and how this affects, you know, businesses serving gay weddings and all of the stuff around that. And, you know, related, a bunch of other states with similar laws, Arkansas in the process of looking at a law like that. Not only that, but even absent those laws, whether or not you have protections for that is actually independent of that. So we'll talk about that. The Daily Show picked a new host. Then all of a sudden, within moments...
You got
moments,
siren going off?
Well, I picked that timer sound
today. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's an old car horn.
Okay. No, it works.
So
I like it.
Our 5 minutes for the intro is up, but we're going to talk about The Daily Show, the new host, the trouble he got in, and just generally expand that topic to sort of the whole notion of political correctness and sensitivity in language and trigger warnings and the whole damn thing. Finally, for our third big segment, we'll be talking about an article that Yvonne dug up, and actually I saw a number of people talking about related topics, basically saying, you know, if you're not recruited for a job or referred for a job, you might as well not even bother applying to like the jobs you see listed online or wherever.
Now, mind you, I will say something about that because it's kind of funny. I know that I'm the one that posted it, and I do believe that it's correct. I'll mention talk about that. It's an interesting subject.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a second. And of course, we'll have our lightning round. And we got, as we did last week, we have a whole bunch of things. We don't plan to get all of them. We will time limit the lightning round. And that's the plan. So we're going to take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about the goings on in Indiana. We'll talk to you after this.
Information.
Okay, we're back. Now, before we dive deep into this, I want to do two things. One, there's been a bunch of controversy about what does this law actually do? Does it do anything? Does it do what the critics are saying it does? Is it more innocent than that? Blah, blah, blah. I will admit right up front to have not dug deeply enough into it to know one way for the other from a legal point of view.
My understanding is that the problem is that unless, like a lot of other states have done, unless you pass something that protects certain groups from discrimination at the same time as you pass a law that's like this, then you wind up in a situation where potentially you are opening people up to that.
Well,
okay?
The thing is that's been pointed out is, in fact, you're already open for that. Unless you have one of those civil rights laws that you mentioned that specifically prohibits discriminations against lesbians, gays, etc.,
right,
then, in fact, they are not a protected class right now in most of the country.
That is correct.
So you are actually in I think it's like 27 or 28 states, You are absolutely and totally free to fire somebody because they're gay. You are free to refuse service to somebody because they're gay. And it has nothing to do with these sort of, you know, religious freedom protection acts.
But now you're at, I guess the whole point about the law is that you are adding an element of allowing people to be able to lawfully, discriminate based on religion. And I guess that's the problem with it.
So yeah, I mean, so what is the law itself intended to do right now? It's supposed to basically. Correct me. I'm struggling here because, like I said, there's been such a massive propaganda around this that unless you dive deep into it, it's hard to see what's really going on. Is the nominal intention basically to say, if you have a religious objection to something, you should not be forced to do it? Is that the bottom line?
That's what I understood by the law. Yes.
Right. And so the specific example that's been brought up, but is not mentioned directly in the law, is cases of businesses having to provide services that support gay marriage, essentially, is the one that's come up the most. Bakers not having to supply cakes to gay weddings. There was a case in Washington State where I am a couple years ago about a florist who didn't want to supply flowers to a gay wedding. Etc. And, you know, is this okay? And, you know, I will confess my unpopular position, and I've done this on the show before we quickly dismiss it and move on, because I know I am out of step, you know, in many ways here. But I fundamentally think that government imposing, by law, saying private businesses must serve person X, Y, or Z is an overreach, and government really shouldn't be doing that. And that in general, the government is very much in the right in imposing anti-discrimination laws on the government itself. But that, frankly, private businesses should be allowed to discriminate on whatever they want and then just suffer the economic consequences thereof. So
I think that, of course, what you're missing is that the economic power that very many large companies have over your life.
Yeah.
So what if a power company decides, I don't want to give electricity to gay people?
Right.
And what is the option that those people have, or black people?
Right. And I think we when we discussed this last a number of months ago, I allowed for the exception of sort of critical services.
But even go beyond that, for example, you know, so great. But that's where it gets, because then housing, for example.
Yes.
What about shopping at a supermarket,
right,
for example? I mean, then you have to start freaking, like, you know, pulling hairs as to what the hell is critical. What about a place to cut your hair? Is that critical? I mean, some may consider yes, some may consider no.
Well, and I think part of the answer to that question is, are there alternatives available, blah, blah, blah. Like, you probably don't have five electric companies to pick from, but you probably do have six barbers to pick from, and one of them will probably serve you. But if none of them will, then maybe you do have a problem. But even then, there's a question of choice. So obviously this, you know, as I said, I'm going to move quickly back from this, because I sort of view this as a theoretical objection that sort of
Sam is thinking in his it's in his wishful, not a bad wish, can I be honest, utopian world where everybody should be respectful to people and, like, you know, peace and love, and we're all going to respect each other. But
yeah,
the problem is that, as I keep telling Sam, the problem is we got a lot of pricks out there.
Well, but the question is, at what point does it pass beyond, okay, that guy's a prick, to, okay, that guy's a prick, and we have to do something legal with the force of the government to stop him from being a
prick. Think about why these laws came into effect like many years, especially discrimination against blacks. You know, banks would go. No banks would give them mortgages because they lived in neighborhoods. And so therefore, nobody would build a house in those neighborhoods. And then they would discriminate in housing. Well, a lot of the landlords in many places used to be a small group of people. Well, they were all fucking racist. There you go. They're all racist. And therefore, they went and they curtail their access to housing. So it becomes a thing when you have – look, well, we're talking about economic power in the United States, and the 1% controls like what the heck, over 50% of the economic assets in the United States. It really becomes an issue where if you don't have laws like that, you have a certain small group of people that can definitely go and like exert enormous influence over what you can have or not.
Right. So as I was saying, my objection is mostly like theoretical. In an ideal world, the government wouldn't have to pass laws like this, but you make all the right points about all of the consequences of, you know, as we saw, you know, during the civil rights era, you know, without these laws, you know, the economic effects weren't breaking it down, or we're not breaking it down quickly anyway.
Not at all. They didn't care. They were not.
Lots of people were willing to lose money in order to reinforce their prejudices.
Absolutely.
Anyway, stepping back from that, because like I said, my view on that has been discounted for 40 plus 50 plus years, as the notion has come on board that there is a government role in saying that certain types of discrimination are inappropriate. And so the question that's going on right now is really extension of this to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, etc., and whether that's appropriate or not. And so pivoting quickly to the politics of this situation, the governor of Indiana says this was not intended to discriminate against gay people at all. It's just
what a load of crap. the problem is that somebody pointed out that quite a lot of the people that influenced the law, and I don't have the names right now, but I was reading an article, have been fervent anti-gay people.
Have a long history of comments about, you know, wanting to, at the very least, you know, slow the roll of increasing, you know, acceptance of gays and lesbians, and more likely roll it back, and are perfectly happy, you know, making things illegal, and including Governor Pence himself. So there's a lot of history there that shows that, you can say whatever you want to say, but it's hard to believe you.
Exactly.
Now, having said that, as people have pointed out, and as I was starting to say at the beginning of this segment, those classes aren't protected in Indiana right now anyway. So whether or not you put this law in place, the rights of small businesses to discriminate against gays are already there. Right now, there is no protections in Indiana and many, many other states.
I agree, but yet at the same time, why the heck did you pass the law anyway? You know, my point is that you passed the law basically to what?
To make a point. And the problem is it's blown up in their face.
Right.
I've seen a couple articles now in TPM and some other place talking about just how remarkable what we're seeing here is. First of all, we've seen lots of high-profile companies, individuals, whatever, basically saying they're going to boycott Indiana. There's been at least one major conference canceled. There is potentially some economic impact here. And so you immediately started seeing Governor Pence and others sort of backing off and making these comments. Oh, no. We did not intend this to, we're against discrimination, all discrimination, and blah, blah, blah. You see these people that there is actually nobody actively, no major prominent politician who has actually been saying what I said at the beginning of this segment, where who's been standing up and saying, yes, you know, I think it's absolutely okay for a shopkeeper to say no to a gay person if they want to. Nobody's taking that point of view. And, you know, I think that's that is a big change, because a few years ago, they probably would have defended that position much more vigorously. Instead, right. We see an almost immediate back off from that position. And, you know, even the governor saying, OK, we'll pass clarifying legislation to say, OK, that's not what we meant and blah, blah, blah. Now, even with that, you know, in order to really protect anybody from the kinds of things, you don't need any of this stuff with this law. You need a separate civil rights legislation that says, okay, now gays and lesbians are protected class, just like women, just like blacks, just like ethnicity, religion, gender, all of these things. It's you know, sexual orientation is now also a protected class. In which case you automatically get a whole bunch of laws coming into play. So you get employment protection laws, housing protection laws, rules that require public businesses to give service to you. All of those things would come into play. And the interesting fact of the politics here is the fact that they went and passed this law is causing all this blowback that may actually cause them to go ahead and pass one of these laws, adding more protections.
Which is probably exactly the opposite of what they wanted.
Right. And that may or may not happen, but there's certainly, with all of the attention on there, you see, you know, them in Indianapolis, which is, of course, a big city and so therefore has much more liberal views than the rest of Indiana. You know, the major paper there had their entire front page dedicated towards an editorial that the big title was "Fix This Now," you know, in huge letters, basically saying that by passing this law and the governor signing it, the state government was screwing over the state of Indiana. And there would be major repercussions, and the state looked like fools in the face of, you know, the rest of the country and the world, and they needed to fix it. And the fact that doing something like this is actually proving to be politically damaging, as opposed to something that, you know, they could just be like, yeah, we did that, we're proud of it. You know, if you don't like it, leave the state. Shows, you know, how much things are shifting. And Indiana is a pretty red state. I mean, we're not talking, you know, Mississippi or something, but it's pretty red.
But actually, they've had Democratic governors.
They've had Democratic senators. They went Obama in 2008 as well.
Right. So it's not as red a state as a lot of other states.
That's very true. But you know, it's on the redder side of the American political.
Yes.
And so
I happen to have lived there for
a little. Yeah, you lived in Indiana for a while. What are your thoughts there?
I think that, you know, Indiana is, like you mentioned, I mean, it is a redder state, but there's substantial divides because of the fact that, I mean, they've got, you know, Indiana is a state with very large educational institutions, a very large city like Indianapolis, basically a northwest Indiana that's basically a suburb of Chicago. So it's a state that has a very split population in their views. It has a very big population, and it's kind of like Florida in a certain extent, where South Florida is, I mean, 180 degrees different from Northern Florida. I mean, right. Jacksonville and Miami could not be more diametrically out. I mean, Jacksonville might as well be in Georgia. I mean, reality. Right. Yes. So.
And we mentioned also that there are a number of other states. Arkansas, the legislature passed a law. There's now a question of whether or not the governor will actually veto that law. He wasn't going to, but with all of the pressure on Indiana, plus, you know, Walmart coming out and saying, which is, of course, a major, you know, Arkansas business, coming out and saying, this is ridiculous, don't do this.
I was shocked that they went flat out and said it, and the governor all of a sudden said, well, I ain't signing this.
Right.
You know,
And that's what's been happening here. And this is the remarkable thing. And we are over on the segment, but this happened. And all of a sudden you've had this huge backlash, not just from your usual liberal
right
corners, but all sorts of big businesses across
the board.
Now, yes. Of course, you know, having said that, big businesses, you know, these are big businesses very often run by liberals. You're not seeing the Koch brothers coming out or Koch brothers coming out and saying this. I get confused. Anyway, you don't see them coming out this. You don't see a lot of other, you know, businesses that are more associated with conservative positions doing this. You know, Hobby Lobby's not going to come out and protest.
No, and I get that, but I do think that when businesses are saying this, I think they're saying it because I think they feel at this point in overall America, okay, right? Not talking individual states.
Yep.
The majority of America does not like this position.
Yeah, and right now, acceptance of gay marriage specifically went over 50% a year or two ago nationally and is going up further every single year. You see that reflected in, you know, in and of course, the acceptance of, you know, gay people are okay is much higher than that.
Right.
You know, and so you see, and it's remarkable how quickly this change has happened, you know, over the last, you know, even over the last 5 years, but, you know,
oh, yeah.
You know, how quickly this change has happened in people's viewpoints, and it's just accelerating. And so you go from the point of view of, you know, this kind of thing would be completely non-controversial a few years ago to right now, Indiana tries to do it and all hell breaks loose. Now, as people have pointed out, there are a number of other states and even a federal law that's similar to this, although apparently the Indiana view one was stronger in a variety of ways that made it sort of qualitatively different. But like, you know, nobody was saying anything when miscellaneous other states passed these kinds of things over the course of the last 10 years.
But I think, opinions have changed. I shouldn't say nobody.
Of course, people, some people.
No, but I think opinions have changed from when some of these laws were passed, like some even like as back as 20 years ago versus now.
Right.
And I think that that's what the reason for the backlash is, how opinions have changed on this substantially. Yeah,
and I think it is a majority opinion at this point that, you know, the law actually should prevent you from being an asshole to gays and lesbians.
Right.
And I'll admit to being a little bit queasy about this in certain circumstances. Like, you know, okay, you mentioned the power company shouldn't be able to say, I'm not going to give you power because you're gay. But, you know, if you've got an independent small baker, you know, and you're like, I want my gay wedding cake from you, you know, is it really that big a deal if they say, no, go to the guys across the street that do it?
I think the problem, but like I said about this, the problem is like, it's you start splitting hairs. Where the hell do you draw the line?
Right.
That's the problem. And then it just becomes, then you start making really bad law. Okay, it that's the problem. If you're going to stop the discrimination, it's got to be across the board. It is what it is. I mean, there's just no real good way to do it.
Well, but let's move beyond this, though, because you've got another slippery slope argument that says, okay, well, you know, let's say I saw this example posted by somebody. Let's say instead of making a cake for a gay wedding, mm-hmm. it's the girls gone wild people want to come in and have you do a cater their party for, you know, their all singing, all dancing, topless review, and you are a religious conservative who objects to that kind of thing. Do you have to? Would you have to be forced to go cater that event? Now, obviously, it's not, you know, gay, lesbian protected class, but again, it's a question of, you know, can I use my religious scruples to say, you know, no, I'd rather not make a cake for you because I object to the kind of thing you do. I don't like Girls Gone Wild, or, you know, if you want to make it more extreme, you know, make it a porn convention or something. If somebody wants to have a porn convention in my hotel, do I have to say yes? Is it discrimination not to say yes?
Those are very good questions. I don't know if I have the answer to that. I think the difference is,
well, exactly.
I don't
exactly because once you say there are certain.
Well, I think you're discriminating against an activity versus a person. Okay, all right. I think that's what I
guess. Okay, well, let's say
you don't want to be in a place where there's a whole bunch of naked people. Okay, all right. I don't really understand what the problem is, but okay, you know, it is what it is. Okay, great, beautiful. So, you're not discriminating. I mean, if they were fully clothed, you may not have a problem. You just don't want to be at a party where everybody is naked.
You can have some.
You decide to have a party at the 100th floor and you're scared of heights.
Let's say it's not an activity. Let's say it's a, you know, do you have to accept the neo-Nazi convention at your hotel that you own?
I would say, unless it's illegal, the answer is probably yes, and I don't like it.
Well, and sort of, I think, you know, like I'm all for the neo-Nazis parading, but I think if I'm a hotel owner and I object to it, then I should be able to prohibit it. So if we go continue down that, if we continue down that line, we've talked before about, like, you know, Facebook being able to censor what gets posted on their site because it's a private business, and they should be able to say, I don't want porn on my site, or I don't want objectionable content, or I don't want people threatening other people, or I don't want whatever. And because it's a private platform, they don't have to give people a platform.
But like I said, you're blocking individual activity, not a person, is the point. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. You know, so they don't allow you to go and punch somebody, okay, in a party, but they will let you be there at the party. They just say, hey, you can't walk in naked, you can't punch other people, you can't piss on the food. You know, so it's specific activities, okay? But you see, but I'm saying you can come, no problem, but you have to abide by those rules.
I think you could easily come up with scenarios, if you thought about it, where it would still be like, you know, I don't want to provide a service to you. Like, let's say it's the cake example again, like not people coming into your hotel. It's, you know, it's the porn convention and they want you to make them a cake. And for the sake of argument, let's say they don't even want it to have pornographic decorations. They just want to say,
it's just a cake.
Welcome to, you know, the adult performers convention or something.
To Porn Fest 2015.
Right. Or even take out the word porn. You know, so that you're not offended.
Welcome to our 2015 reunion, whatever. I just don't see how that you could, what leg you have to stand on for that. They're not making you go in there and strip naked. They're not making whatever. You're refusing to provide service for no particularly good reason whatsoever. Other than you just don't like them.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah. But the argument is not just it's not just that you don't like them, but you find that what they're doing is morally objectionable, and you're supporting them by doing it.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm like, you know, like I said, I think you can prohibit people from an activity, but you can't just bar a person because of what they are. You know, so.
So, along the same lines, if you've got the right-wing conservative florist and Planned Parenthood is having an event, they couldn't say, I don't want to sell you the flowers because we object to abortion.
Yeah, oh boy. There you go. Just walk into another. Well, okay. Well, I don't know.
I'm trying to get the extreme examples, right. But my only point is that there are a lot of potential slippery slopes around this issue. And the problem with slippery slope argument, of course, is always that, you know, it's a fallacy to say just because you start down the slippery slope, you're necessarily going to go all the way to the other end of that slippery slope. And there are tough calls and, you know, this situation might be okay to do and that situation might not be. But at the same time, once you admit to a particular argument, it makes it easier to argue further things down the road, you know, in terms of all kinds of things. I mean, we talked about this with the Hobby Lobby decision too, that, you know, they don't get the, you know, the decision was they didn't have to pay for certain kinds of health care that they objected to. Well, what about all the other religious groups that object to various other kinds of procedures, and how does this expand out from there? So you always have those kinds of arguments.
All right, well, we've gone way off the reservation, and I'm just like, look.
And we're okay, way over time.
Yeah, we're way over time. So I don't know. We'll never solve this dilemma.
Yeah, bottom line, I think, you know, the key thing to notice out of this event is just how far public opinion has changed on these issues in the last 10 to 15 years. And now, all of a sudden, even in a state like Indiana, pushing something that even looks like it might be prejudicial to gays and lesbians has a huge political ramification, negative ramification. And yep, that just would not have been true before. And I think this trend is going to continue.
Right.
Okay. Way over on that. Sorry for all the tangents. We'll be back and we'll talk about the new Daily Show host and the trouble he got into.
Hopefully for a shorter amount of time. We'll be right back.
Back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, here we are.
We are?
We are.
We are.
We are Q, we are S, we are T, all of the letters.
Okay.
So my web browser still isn't working. What's this guy's name? I've actually seen a couple skits he was in.
Tony Hall? Hang on, I got it here.
Anyway, while you look that up, the point is
Trevor Tony Hall. What the hell? Trevor Noah.
Trevor Noah.
He had a T. There's an H.
You were close.
I had a T and an H.
There you go. So John Stewart announced like a month ago that he was leaving The Daily Show. Comedy Central just announced his replacement. It's this Trevor guy that Yvonne mentioned. He is a South African comedian. He's been on The Daily Show a few times. I listened to a couple of his things. They were okay. I wasn't, you know, blown away either, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm not like, woohoo, look at the new guy. Yay. Yeah. I have no idea. Actually, you went further ahead. I have no clue who the guy
is. Well, by the way, I didn't go looking for it. I had just actually seen a couple of his skits in the past when he was on the show. But anyway, so of course, after this is announced, people go digging through his Twitter and the last few years of Twitter, and they find some particular comments, jokes, whatever, that, you know, in one case, they say, you know, he's making anti-Semitic comments. In another, he's making sexist comments. You know, I've heard, you know, he's even racist comments, various other things that are offensive to various people. And so we got this big, you know, people getting out the pitchforks to go after him, basically. And one thing of which was interesting, of course, is, you know, a lot of this was coming from right-wing commentators of various sorts, because, of course, just like Jon Stewart, this guy is a left-wing progressive type person. And so they're sort of poking and pointing out, like, okay, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? And doesn't that make him unfit? And so and a bunch of liberals were obviously, you know, some of them are defending him. Some of them are like, oh, yeah, you know, those comments are kind of icky, you know, whatever. Since then, he has started to scrub his Facebook and he's put out some comments that basically say, you know, I shouldn't be judged on a handful of jokes that fell flat and didn't really work out anyway. You know, and I'm a comedian. I'm just trying to be funny here. And I poke fun of everybody. And Comedy Central is standing by him so far. But I thought this brought up a more general issue that seems like, you know, we had this whole thing in about political correctness, it seems like back in the 80s or 90s or whatever, and then it sort of went away for a bit. It seems like in the last few years, we've really had a resurgence of people being really sensitive about language and how you call things, and, you know, people talking all the time about privilege, you know, white privilege or gender privilege or whatever, and, you know, how you make a certain comment and, well, you got to be careful about saying that because it might hurt the feeling of this group or that group, or the whole notion of trigger warnings, that there are certain topics that, you know, because they might really upset some people, you should sort of warn people before you talk about them. There's been the talk of sort of safe zones on college campuses where, you know, kids should be, or, you know, shouldn't have to be exposed to hateful speech. All these kinds of things seem to have been growing over the last few years. And we've had conversations even here, you know, about how you're free to say whatever you want, but you might suffer consequences if it's unpopular. But what's your take on this? I'll give you mine. I think this, we do want people to think somewhat about how their comments affect others, but I think we've gotten very much to the degree of being oversensitive to this kind of thing and going on witch hunts after people, and where, especially in the age of Twitter, where one stray comment can get people fired because, oh my God, I can't believe they said that. You know, there was that Justine Sacco person who posted what looked like a racist comment and then got on a 12-hour flight to South Africa. And by the time she got off, she was an international sensation and had lost her job. And you've got lots of examples like this. I think we've just swung the pendulum a little bit too far, and we should realize that, you know, it's okay for people. We shouldn't jump down every statement that could possibly be offensive to somebody or other. And we should let people, you know, judge them by the whole of their actions, not one particular statement, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know.
Well, but I think here's the thing. There is a difference between insulting people and somebody making a joke or a comment and people being insulted and also being like falsely insulted, because, you know, look, I'm Puerto Rican. OK. Yeah. All right. I got Cuban friends. All right. OK. Between me and my Cuban friends, we make jokes about, you know, they'll make jokes to me about Puerto Ricans being stupid or whatever, whatnot. I'll make the same crap about the Cubans, whatever. You know, we call each other names. We say stuff, whatever, whatnot. But it's just, you know, we're making fun of you know, we're laughing. It's just hilarious. It's a way of us to make fun of the stereotypes and whatever, whatnot, that people have of the different cultures. You know, there's a difference between, you know, that and like people really trying to offend somebody. And like, we were talking in our previous segment before about discrimination and whatever, and the stuff that we're talking about. And I think that especially our society, you know, we were talking about language.
We had a few weeks ago that situation with the SAE people on the bus. You know,
right.
They probably wouldn't have done that if they thought it was going to be broadcast on national television. You know, so what it's just a song.
They may
good
have
fun.
Not, but I will say this. You know, there is a difference.
I'm playing devil's advocate here, by the way.
No, but there's a difference between a bunch of white people like going and like yelling up and down how they'll never admit a black person versus, you know, me with my friends of like a certain ethnicity making fun of our different ethnicities. Okay. All right. You know, I think It's there are certain.
So wait, is it allowed if you're making fun of your own group, but not if you're making fun of another group?
It's basically for no, actually, I was making fun of theirs. But the thing is, the point is that we were making fun. We were making fun of the stereotypes. Okay, all right. It was not us calling an insult, which is a different. Which I guess
so,
that's
so like
that, if that's the thing.
If you go back a few generations, you know, and went to comedy clubs or whatever, it would be absolutely common to have ethnic jokes of all sorts.
Oh, yeah.
These days, you're treading on thin ice if you start
telling them. I think they still happen. I think people still do them.
Oh, they do, but it's much more, it's much riskier.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. So I don't know. It's just my problem is like a false outrage about it. It's just ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. People.
Well, and that is part of what I think is driving this particular case. I think a lot of people that are making a big deal out of this aren't actually offended themselves.
Exactly.
They're just sort of poking at. You know, well, other people have gotten in trouble for things they said. So, you know, this guy, we don't really like him. Let's find out things that he's said, and go after him for those. And you know, I'm wondering, you know, take any one of us, and if you can dig back through everything that we've ever said or done, I am absolutely sure it would be trivial to find things we've said that would be offensive to somebody or other. I mean, hell, even earlier in the show when I was playing devil's advocate about laws against discrimination, you know, hell, that's already disqualified me from ever running for public office.
Oh, you're screwed.
Just by the fact I ever even entertained that view. Whereas I would love to have a rational conversation about it and pros and cons and blah, blah, blah. And like I said, you've got lots of good points. But the point is that it seems like everybody is stepping on, it's like walking on eggshells at this point on all sorts of different topics, afraid of offending person X, person Y, person Z, and often with good reason, because we've got this echo chamber where you say one thing wrong and people will jump down your throat and potentially make it a career-ending thing. And it seems like, you know, okay, let's say... let's say he did make a joke that could be perceived as anti-Semitic. Should that be a career ender? Or should you, look at the entirety of what he does and, view, like, does he really hold those views or was he just joking?
Well, exactly, because I guess that's that's what I was trying to say.
Do we apply the same thing to those kids in SAE and say, okay, well, we know that was a 5 minutes on the bus that happened, but do we really know any of those kids? Have we observed them in general? Do we know that that represents what they really believe? Or have we painted them forever for the rest of their lives based on a bad decision they made once on a bus?
I guess like with everything and every joke and every situation, it depends on what the hell you did, for God's sakes. I mean, I don't know. Nothing's black and white. I will say that I think it's possible. Look, I could actually give them the benefit of doubt and say it's possible that those kids were not really a whole bunch of racist raving lunatics and they were just doing something just to be off the wall insane. Okay. Right. I can believe that. Okay. But I will say this, that there seems to be a whole bunch of evidence that this fraternity continuously condones this kind of crap, which is why I hate fraternities for the most part.
Right. That's why. But again, I don't know. I think my general take on all of this stuff is that it's nice to be sensitive. It's nice to understand when you're potentially offending people. But fundamentally, the world doesn't have a right not to be offended. And it's actually important that unpopular views can be expressed. And that includes racist views. That includes sexist views. That includes, unpopular political views. It's important that there is a space. Now, I'm not saying that, Twitter or Facebook or whoever private company necessarily has to be the platform for those things. They do have the right to kick people off. But I think it's important that, you know, these things are expressed, and I'm worried that we've swung the pendulum to the point where, you know, regardless of, you know, official censorship, we're making it an environment where people don't feel comfortable to speak their minds, and people with unpopular points of view end up just shutting up. And I don't think that's the right answer. Like, the people with unpopular points of view should actually feel like they can speak their mind. Now, then in the debate that goes on around that, everybody else should be able to point out exactly why they're wrong, why they're stupid, why, you know, what they're saying is harmful, whatever. But I chafe at the idea that we're creating an environment where just because your view is unpopular, you don't feel safe in coming out and saying it because you feel like you're risking your job or your career, or in some cases, you know, maybe even violence against you, who knows? Because right now, maybe we're applying that against sort of the most offensive 1%, you know, that almost everybody can agree is offensive. But again, another one of these slippery slopes, you know, if we determine that it's okay to, you know, completely ostracize certain forms of expression, then that tends to grow over time and encompass more and more things. Well, you know, this is offensive to me too. Maybe we shouldn't let that happen here. And maybe we shouldn't let this happen. And, you know, again, you have all the pros and cons of slippery slope arguments in general, but I really worry about that because I think that there is a significant public good that comes from making sure people are free to speak their mind in whatever forum, and then have the public debate that rages around that. And, you know, the people who are wrong, prove them wrong, but don't shut them up. I worry about the shutting them up.
Yeah, I agree, but still, I think, you know, it goes back a little bit. Somebody once said, you know, when you write something, you say something, how comfortable would you feel if it's on the cover of the paper? Okay?
Right.
And how you think about when you communicate yourself, and how comfortable would you feel defending that you say? And I think it's an important thing to think of. I think it was in an ethics training that I received like many years ago. And I put a lot of thought to that. So one of the reasons why sometimes I will say, Sam knows that I'm not one guy to mince words, but I will say something that a lot of my words, even if they're put in a cover of a paper, I'll be like, you know what? I can defend it. I'm okay with it. But that kid that said that rant, you know what? After it was made public, he couldn't stand on any leg to defend it, and basically was like, you know,
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, what do you have to say? I mean, you know, you know, especially in this age that you and I know that there is no
such thing as private.
Exactly.
You know,
you should be conscious of that when you say something like that. Are you aware of what you said and what the possible consequences and the backlash you're going to get for saying a statement like that?
Right. And I agree that you should be conscious of that. My worry comes around, like, there shouldn't be super severe consequences just for expressing an unpopular opinion. You know, people should be able to debate
you
on it.
That was a racist, hateful rant.
No, I know.
I think it goes beyond that.
I know 100%. You know, and again, it's a question of degrees, and it's a question of if you make it so that, you know, you should debate the idea that's been shown. And as you said, in that particular case, when it's debated, he can't defend himself. But, you know, people shouldn't feel like they can't say it. They should feel like, you know, okay, I'll say it. And if it's unpopular, there'll be a debate about it. And maybe most people will disagree with me, but I shouldn't be afraid to say it if I truly believe something.
If you truly believe it.
Now, having said that,
so I have said that. So I guess if you truly believe that rant that idiot said, that, you know what, you deserve all the hate you get because you're just a
Yeah, I mean, there's all...
A horrible person!
At the same time...
Let's be clear about it!
At the same time, you should still be, like... You know, you shouldn't intentionally say things that are just outright stupid, that...
And hurtful!
And hurtful. I mean, there's a fine line there. We're over again. Let's take another break. We'll be back.
Yeah, we did such a great job of staying within time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know why I bother setting the timer at 10 minutes. I mean, 15 maybe, but, you know, anyway.
No, it's good to set it at 10.
Yeah, I should make it so it just keeps beeping.
Yes.
Yeah, once it hits the timer, it keeps beeping until we stop. Yeah, anyway, we'll be back after this. Okay, here we go. So you posted an article on Facebook, and I don't know if you posted it on Twitter as well, probably. I think it was from it was the one you posted was from Quartz, but it quoted a Wall Street Journal article that was behind a paywall. And I've actually seen a number of other people talk about it. If you know the title and date and author and stuff, please say it. But the basic point of the article was that the way people really get jobs, at least decent jobs, is through knowing people. And this is, you know, this is conventional wisdom. It's been known for years and years and years, but it's referrals. It's getting recruited.
The articles on Quartz, it says, if you weren't headhunted or referred, it's hardly worth applying for that new job. Now, I will say,
so who is the author and what was the date?
The author is Max Neeson. It's published March 31st, 2015.
There you go.
Now, I will say this. I know I posted this. Okay, all right.
Yep.
But I will tell you this. That I joined HP, that I joined before, and the current company that I'm an employee of, the current company, I applied online. I knew nobody.
My current company, I applied online. I knew nobody. But I will say,
at HP,
I will say though. This is important. I just want to say this. My current job, my current company, I should say, I did apply online. I did not know anybody. I had no internal connections. I did get the job, and at the same time, I got one other offer from another company in the same situation. However, in my entire career, that goes back some 20 years now, this is the only job that was true for out of some, you know, I don't know, 5-6 jobs in that time period. Every single other one of those jobs I got because somebody I knew worked at the other company or was working with the other company and said, you know, Sam, you should come work here. And in before this current company, you know, every interview I had was actually more of a recruiting thing where they were trying to get me to come than it was a true interview, because in every single one of these cases, they came after me rather than the other way around. Now, I will caveat that because I've realized how exceptional that situation was. Most of those jobs were also during the late 90s boom and the period immediately after the late 90s boom in the early 2000s, where there was still some of that activity. And that's a very different economic situation than what we have today. But yeah, out of all the jobs I've had so far, only one has been me cold applying. Every other job I've ever had has been through contacts.
Okay, but like I said, the two companies that I've joined as a professional, because yeah. Sam's been at more companies. I've been at two companies.
Well, I mean, frankly, like most of that time was two companies for me too. I had a couple other minor ones, but like there were a couple college jobs. But I mean, basically, in terms of companies that I've been at for any extended length of time, I've been at Merrill Lynch and I've been at my current company. Everything else has been 2 years or less.
So
and all but one of those were essentially college jobs.
Now, so the thing is that now I will say that what they talk about is true. I will say that changes, promotions, and other things came from knowing the right people and other things. I have helped quite a lot of other people get employment, and basically it's been because I was able to refer them through connections, and that's how I have done that. So it is, as you progress in your career, it is, you know, that networking that you build is the way that you are able to really move and grow. I mean, if you really, it is so, you know, getting a job as a VP of something or whatever by going online and applying for it, the likelihood that you'll get that, I mean, you might as well be playing the lottery. Not that there are people that don't win, don't get me wrong.
But the argument behind that article was, we're not just talking about high-level management positions. We're talking about regular old positions.
Yeah, in general. Okay, yes.
Individual contributor positions, just as much.
Yes.
You know, and so...
No, I mean, I have hired people, you know, I mean, I've hired from every vein. Whether it's people that applied through a recruiter, whether it's people through a referral, whether it's whatever. I mean, I've done through every one of those channels.
And I think the bottom line is, of course, they overstate their case for effect. It's not really true that you might as well not apply.
Right.
You know, lots of people are hired that way.
But it is certainly quite a lot more effective to work your network.
Right. Well, and the problem with that, of course, and part of what's being, and it wasn't directly pointed out with this article, but if you don't have that network,
you're screwed.
And so because it makes it very hard to get in somewhere, you know, yes, you can just blindly apply to things you find online or at company websites, but you're already coming in from a very distinct disadvantage.
Oh yeah.
I'll tell you one example from my family. My wife graduated finally with her degree a few months ago. She has been job hunting since then. She's in not a great position for job hunting. She's 42 years old, just graduated with her bachelor's, has not been in the workforce for about a decade. Mm-hmm. The jobs when she was in the workforce, a variety of different things, because she was primarily, you know, doing the mom thing and, you know, little jobs here and there. So this is not like your ideal resume for going job hunting. And she doesn't have an extensive network of friends, certainly not local to where we are.
Yeah, especially not local, that's for sure.
Especially not local, but, you know, even more remotely. I mean, she's not the kind of person, and I'm not either, that maintains an extensive friend network or does a really good job at keeping in touch with people or anything like that. Like, you know, there are a handful of people I've kept in touch with over the years, but for the most part, like professional network wise, you know, like they're people I worked with 5 years ago. I barely even remember their names, let alone know what they're doing now and where they are and what's going on with them. I have to make a very conscious effort to try to reach out to that network to like sort of keep contacts up to date, and I suck at it, and my wife is just as bad or worse at that.
My wife makes fun of me. My wife says that I keep like together like a mafia of people, like, you know, like from all my previous jobs or whatever. I go and I very much like
you work your contact network.
It's not work. I mean, they're friends of mine, you know. All right. I mean, I keep in touch with them, and I like keeping in touch with them. I mean, you know, like this week I had one of the guys who I used to work with at HP. I mean, it's been 5 years I left. And I consider him one of my best friends. He lives in Brazil, and he came over, and I got to see him a couple of times this week because he was over here. Went to see, you know, watch tennis and do other stuff and whatever. Unfortunately, we were supposed to watch a basketball game last night, but my son wound up in the emergency room, so I couldn't go to the game.
And everybody listening, he's fine now.
He's fine. He's fine. He was just sick. It's just a bug. But anyway.
Meanwhile, I'll compare myself. Like, if you are a work acquaintance of mine, there's only a small number of those who've somehow graduated into personal friends that I've kept in touch with in any way. For the most part, you know, once they are no longer interacting with me on a day-to-day basis at work, you know, I very quickly lose touch with them. I have no idea, you know, what they are, and I'm bad with names anyway. So, like, you know, a couple times, you know, people have actually come up to me and said, "Hey, Sam, blah blah blah, good to see you," and I'm like, "Who are you?" Yeah, I vaguely remember I worked with you.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, that happens to me, but you know, I mean, I think that one of the problems also is because I've been in management for so many years, and I wind up like a lot of more people know my name than I know theirs. So I keep having people coming over to me and say hi, and I'm like, oh, crap. Who the hell are you?
So anyway, my point is here. Like, if your only resource is, you know, looking for online listings, going to job fairs, things like that, it's much, much tougher to find something, especially if you're looking for something that, you know, say actually matches your interests or your education or whatever, as opposed to, hey, can I go flip some burgers? You know, which is a different kind of job, you know? So I don't know.
Okay. All right. The horn went off.
The one other thing I said about it is, I don't know. I think it's just the way things are naturally, but it does help reinforce, like, you know, people who come from disadvantaged backgrounds. It's one of the things that makes it harder to break in, you know, and, you know, should, you know, are there things that we could do as companies? Are there things that we could do as a society to sort of make it easier to sort of shuffle things up and let people break in? Because there are undoubtedly all sorts of resources out there of people who could do amazing things, but don't have the connections, so never get into places where they could do those things.
Well, okay. Well, come on.
Okay, next.
Lightning round.
We're taking a break. We'll come back. We'll do the lightning round. We will cap the lightning round at 15 minutes. And like we did before, we'll alternate 1 minute between the two of us. Back after this. Hey, you, listeners. We know you have thoughts about the stuff we say here on Curmudgeon's Corner. You probably think we're completely wrong about many things. Or perhaps you want to tell us that we're geniuses. That's always great. Or perhaps you just want to suggest a topic for us to talk about. All of these things are wonderful. We love to hear from you. So talk to us. If you prefer email, just email Sam. That's me, your prime curmudgeon, at abulsme@abulsme.com. That's spelled A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Or tweet at us. I'm at abulsme. And Yvonne is at IMBO. That's I-M-B-O-U. And while we may not do it every time, don't be surprised if we respond to you right here on the show during an upcoming episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll be looking for your email and tweets, so get right on that. Okay. Here we are. Very exciting. So, Yvonne and I have a list of topics. We both have them up in front of us. Last week, Yvonne started. So, therefore, this week, I will start. And we'll do these one-minute rounds. Here we go. So, I'll start out with Periscope and Meerkat. Have you been following things enough to know what that is?
Look, I heard of it, and I keep hearing people mention it, but I have not heard what the hell it is.
You have not heard what they are?
No, I mean, I heard the term, and I just don't know what the heck it is. So what the hell does Periscope do? What it got with okay. Twitter? What?
Both of these platforms are basically systems for doing live video broadcasting facilitated by Twitter. So, for instance, right now, this very second, I started broadcasting a live video of me talking on this show on Periscope.
They did?
Yeah, and so a tweet should have just gone out and said that, and if you had Periscope installed, and maybe even if you didn't, you could click through it and see the video.
Oh, okay.
And so basically, these are things where the intention is to provide a quick and easy platform that anybody can go live. And Meerkat came out first, and then Twitter posted their own version, which is Periscope, a few days later, and it quickly eclipsed Meerkat. And of course, there have been various solutions for this before, Ustream and a bunch of other things like that. And they never really super caught on. And so the intention here is, can you make it more effective, more interesting, more compelling by the integration with Twitter? And I don't know, I think Meerkat's doomed because Periscope is, it's frankly better, and it's, because it's owned by Twitter, it's going to be better integrated with Twitter. A bunch of these have been really stupid. People broadcast stuff for a few minutes and people were showing the insides of their fridge. I showed myself walking down a street a couple times. I'm doing this now and we've got one person watching, which is probably you. The interesting part comes with live, like, news-y type events. There was a fire in New York City. A building had a gas main explosion or something, and people were live broadcasting that within seconds of it happening. When we've had protests at Ferguson or whatever, people have done that. So there's a lot of potential here. It's an interesting technology. We'll see where it goes. And I'm way over my time. So, done. Your turn.
Oh boy, let me see. What the Clinton email again? So what happened with that?
Oh, basically her hole is getting dug deeper. It's there's very little coming on in terms of there actually being an impact on the polls or anything. There's some evidence that things might be tightening up in a few states, but for the most part not a big effect yet. However, their emails came out that actually did show a mixing of work and personal in a couple things. Their emails that came out that showed, in fact, she was using an iPad that had both kinds of accounts on it. You know, she said she had the separate account because she didn't want to carry two devices. But there was a situation where she thought she was answering an email about, you know, her daughter's wedding and floral arrangements and all that kind of stuff, but accidentally sent the response to, like, somebody on a national security staff or something. Okay. It was like, oops, I didn't mean to mail you. So obviously there was shared stuff. Also, the other important thing that came out is that, you know, we were talking about, well, if she was deleting mail, you know, all of this time, all the way through, then, you know, you're not going to recover stuff from 6 years ago. Too much would have happened. It's probably not even the same machine. No, it turns out she didn't do the wiping of her server and all the documents on it until after she got the request from the State Department to turn over documents. She turned over the documents she thought she was relevant, and then she erased everything else. So that brings up a couple things.
Which is just... it's just stupid.
So that brings up a couple things. One, it's recent enough that there might be stuff recoverable unless her right. IT staff specifically was doing
did
things
one of those
in
data
such a way
over, right.
to do a wipe.
Right.
Or to even destroy the server or switch it out or whatever. But if it was just a casual, let's hit the delete button, it's only a couple months ago. It's not a high volume server.
Probably
you probably could get stuff back.
Yeah.
And second, of course, is... you deleted the stuff after it was actually under subpoena?
Yeah, that's just...
what?
That's,
you know? I mean,
that's, just, I mean, this whole thing, I mean, like I said, this whole thing has smelled like shit since the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, they're going to keep digging. I mean, the Republicans are already pushing to get, you know, they're calling her before the committee to testify again. They're subpoenaing more stuff. You know, people have got to be digging everywhere they possibly can to find these things. Because, of course, the other thing, regardless of what she did with the server, there's a basic reality of email that every time you send an email, guess what? Somebody receives that email. And they might have that email.
Right.
You know, and not to mention the places in transit, the place things could be intercepted, whatever. So it's all about, at this point, can you catch her in a lie? And if you catch her in a lie, can you make political hay out of it? Right. And, of course, you still have a significant part of the population saying, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I still think it's not going to have a really huge impact. But again, that's...
You know, unless...
What do they dig up?
Unless somebody digs up something, you know... Right.
Right. And so this is going to continue to be a pain for her from now on. Self-inflicted wound.
It's all done. She's just done this whole thing into herself. So,
absolutely. You know,
like I said before, all the grief she's getting, she deserves because she's just done it to herself. So keep piling on.
Okay, next for me. We got feedback again. We got feedback from Bruce. He said the timestamps that I've been putting out are no use from him. That seems to be the consensus here. We'll see if I do it. He also said last week's show was the best lightning round ever. Probably because we capped it at 15 minutes and did a relatively good job at sticking to 1 minute, which we haven't been so far this time. He also mentioned don't spoil movies ever. Because I spoiled the ending to Escape to Witch Mountain. And the previous week, I spoiled the ending to King Kong.
Come on! We can spoil movies that are 20, 30 plus years old! Seriously?
Well, you know, I think he's right. At least give the spoiler warning. We were talking about trigger warnings earlier. There's also spoiler warnings.
Oh, okay, we can do a spoiler warning.
Yeah, so
okay.
We can say... I'm going to spoil the movie, so if you care, skip the next minute, you know, or whatever. Right. So we appreciate that feedback. Okay, your turn.
Iran talks. Yes. So they keep talking. They keep going, whether we're going to get a deal, not get a deal, get a deal, not get a deal. What do you think? I don't know. Are we getting a deal or not?
Do. This is Sam from the future. In the time between when we recorded this and when I'm putting out the episode, obviously there was a result to the Iran talks. A preliminary framework was agreed to, and it actually had a lot more specificity than a lot of people expected. I guess from an expectations point of view, conservatives are... going nuts that this is giving away the farm and this is a bad deal, blah, blah, blah. A lot of liberals are actually like, hey, we got a lot more than we expected we'd get. So this is pretty good. The debate will continue because, of course, this is a preliminary framework and the deadline for a full detailed agreement is June. So back to the show, and you can compare what Yvonne and I said about it versus what you all know has now actually happened. It seems like the administration is so desperate for it. And, you know, the Republicans actually have a point when they say it looks like we're willing to give in almost everything. And we make it look like we really, really don't want to walk away. And so we're giving up leverage. I don't know. I think it's still worth it. I think it's still the right thing to do. It's coming down to the wire, though, but I think the answer is, and a number of people have said things along this line, and I retweeted some of them, they will find a way to agree to something. That something may be very fuzzy, that thing may be very non-specific, but they'll find a way that they can...
Do you think it's a bad idea to agree to something?
No, I don't. I think this is direction to go in. I think they're doing the right thing. I think they will agree to something that will allow them to kick the can down the road for another few months. Because the next deadline is in June. They will find some way to agree to something so that they can kick the can down the road to June and keep talking.
I think it's a start. You got to start somewhere. Okay. It's been so many years of like mistrust and blockade and everything starts somewhere. So, all right, next.
Okay, my turn again. Speaking of Escape from Witch Mountain, yesterday I actually watched the first sequel to that, Return from Witch Mountain, which I forgot to write down the year. I think it was 1978 or something. It was a couple years after the first one. Let me just, so the idea is the same kids, same actors, same everything, come back from Witch Mountain and they have another little adventure. Let me just tell you, the first one was, oh, okay, that's kind of cute. It's kind of really dated, but it's kind of cute. Don't bother unless you have sort of, you have nostalgia about having watched this when you were a kid. This second one just outright sucked. It was awful. Just an awful movie. The acting was bad. The plot was stupid. The one thing I was looking for is, you know, hey, they were aliens. Let's find out more about how they're aliens. You get none of that. Oh, sorry. Was that a spoiler? Spoiler alert. They get dropped off out of the spaceship, go have an adventure, use their magic powers.
I kind of remember this movie.
And then get picked up by the spaceship again at the end. And, you know, the end. And it sucked. It sucked. And, you know, there's still more in this. And so I will probably be watching more Witch Mountain series. Of course, the latest one was just a couple years ago. The Rock was in it. But we'll see. Anyway, that's it. Your turn.
Gosh. Harry Reid's retiring.
Okay, go.
He's retiring. I don't know. I didn't hear why he was retiring.
Well, let's see. I mean, he's old.
I know he's old.
He had that injury a couple months ago where he like screwed up his eye.
Uh-huh.
And yeah.
He's old.
That's about it. And there's nobody watching my Periscope anymore, so I'm going to stop my stream.
Oh well.
So sad. Anyway, so I don't know that Chuck Schumer's apparently probably going to replace him, and I have no opinion on that either.
Yeah. Okay, so he's done.
Okay, and he's not quitting right away. He's just not running.
Right, right. He's just not going to run for re-election, right?
Yeah, and anyway, so my turn again, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here I'll ask this one. We've been doing the lightning round, whatever. For a little while, I had that bell, but then my son stole it, and I have not found that bell since then.
Really? I mean, he's like just completely ran off with it. Can't find a bell.
Can't find the bell. Now, to be fair, you know, our house is a disaster. You can probably imagine, having been in previous places I've lived. But like both my wife and me are completely harried for time. We never have time for. So it's a disaster. Like we clean up when my mom comes over to visit. Yeah, the room she's going to be in. So I don't know. I haven't found this thing. I don't know. Yeah. So the question is, this is a requested audience. I've been using my timer and my iPad or my phone has been making noise.
Can I be honest?
But should I buy a new bell? It was like $5.
Yes.
Should I buy a new bell?
I'm going to go with yes. I like the bell.
Okay. I'd be interested to hear from everybody else too, because otherwise you get like that car noise or something instead.
Yeah. The bell was better.
Okay. Your turn.
And we got time for like
two more of these.
So they don't got water. Yeah, here's the thing.
Oh, California. Yeah, the drought. Yeah, California.
The drought. Well, I still don't understand why they insist on farming in California. It's not like in this country we're like we have a lack of
I'll mention. I've seen, you know, they just the governor Brown, for the first time in California's history, apparently enacted mandatory water conservation measures. But everybody's talking about the conservation measures on homeowners, businesses, etc. They aren't talking about the farmers, and a very significant chunk of the water use in California is the farmers.
Yes, and the problem is that's the reason why they are in such a frickin' dire straits for water. And so I just don't understand. Look, I understand it would have an economic impact in California, but I don't know what a percentage of it is farming to a certain extent. But I mean, I'm sorry, but it's just they don't have the they can't keep do doing what they've been doing. There's just not enough water. It is what it is.
Okay, my turn, and this is going to be the last one because it's going to take us over 15 minutes. We talked last week about the plane crash and how safety over time goes from looking at 1 in 1,000 events to 1 in 10,000 to 1 in a million, etc.
Yep.
And you sort of ratchet that up. One thing that I didn't point out there that I think is actually an interesting part of the debate is, of course, there's a cost-benefit analysis there. At what point do you reach diminishing returns? Is it worth going after?
Oh, we're already at diminishing returns.
Yeah, I mean, is it worth going after the event that happens 1 in a billion times? Like people pointed out, of course, in this case, you went after, you know, the very, very rare event of people, you know, storming the cockpit and taking over and crashing into the World Trade Center by reinforcing the doors, which allowed this to happen. So right. are you actually still able to make anything better? And also, even aside from that kind of stuff, are you doing a proper cost-benefit analysis? Because, like, as an example that's sort of easily pointed out, cars. We've got all kinds of mandated safety features in cars, and they save lots and lots and lots of lives.
Yes.
However, do you have any doubts whatsoever that if you allowed car companies to produce a low-cost car that got to be low-cost by stripping out many of the safety features, that there wouldn't be a market for it?
I'm sure there would be, but the problem is, here's the thing. Life is, you know, here's the problem. When cost-benefit analysis involves, like, death, you see, the problem with, like, death is this, that you're dead. So, you know what? Listen,
right, but the question
I mean,
is,
if you're telling me, you know, look, oh, here's, you know, I get what you're saying, but the problem is that the avoidance is of you being dead.
Right. So,
and it's kind of like nice to be alive,
but the
because
question is, should
it doesn't matter how cheap it is if you're dead.
Well, right, but should the government decide or should I? Like, is it actually, because, like, you know, maybe for me, I'm willing to take the risk of driving a $1,000 car without all the protections.
But the thing is that should
the government force me to drive a safer car than I would like?
I will tell you why. Because it's not just dead. Because most of them are injuries.
Society
and then the freaking injuries everybody else has to pay for.
Yes. Not to mention that at least some of these safety features help third parties as well.
Yes.
Know? But yeah, I mean, the primary argument for some of these things is that, you know, the cost of you driving an unsafe car isn't actually limited to just you.
Exactly.
You get killed. Well, you know, if you were the income for your family,
right,
your whole family is screwed by that.
Right.
If you get injured and don't have proper insurance, everybody ends up paying
exactly.
for that.
Exactly.
And there come
now
even still, is there a balance?
Cars. Look, Warren Buffett, owner of Geico, one of the largest insurance companies, said that right now, as the way is progressing, he's saying in the future, I'm going to be out of business. He said it flat out. I mean, at least in the car insurance business.
Because they'll be so safe, nobody will ever have an accident.
Well, yes. Or at least the cost of the insurance is going to be so low, it's like becomes infinitesimal.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, we're done. We left a lot of topics on the table, but we're over our 15 minutes.
Agriculture is 2% of California GDP.
And how much of the water use?
I think it's about 50% the last time I looked.
Right.
So, yeah, I think they need to freaking get out of the agricultural business.
Well, I mean, yeah, the fundamental issue of major parts of California is you got the agriculture, you got the people, you got everything else living in a desert.
Right.
In a way that is only sustainable by bringing in huge amounts of water from outside.
Right. So instead of bringing all that water, I think they need to import food.
Okay. Or make people leave.
Oh, we'll send them somewhere. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm joking about making people leave.
But if
you let California revert to its natural, you know, state without all sorts of man-made interventions, it would be a lot less hospitable place than it actually is, or at least major parts of it would be. It wouldn't be able to sustain the population that lives there today.
Well, yeah. So anyway.
Anyway, right. we're over. It's time to quit. You know, some of the topics we didn't include, maybe we'll come up again next week. We'll see.
Who knows?
The Periscope one was originally for last week. So it's time to close up. As usual, you can reach us. I'm Abelsmay at Abelsmay.com. And we're both on Twitter as well. I'm Abelsmay. Yvonne is I am Bo. We're now on Facebook at Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook. I would like to report that based on our request on last week's show for people to like us on Facebook, we got one additional like on our Facebook page. Very
That's
exciting.
That's really pathetic.
One additional like. And so thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
So we'll have to do some more like requests later, not just on the show, but to our own network of friends. But one person. So thank you very much for that. But anyway, like us on Facebook, please. And, you know, tell your friends, share our show, and, you know, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. Anything else you want to say, Yvonne, or should we just say goodbye?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.